Hi, everyone. Welcome to Nancy's Metaphysical World and More. My name is Nancy, and I host the show. And today, I have a guest, and we're going to talk about one of my favorite topics. And so I'm going to bring him on right away. His name is Nicholas Redford, and he is an author. He has written a book called Contactees and several other books dealing with the UFO phenomenon. So it's okay if I call you Nick?
Yep, that's fine, Nancy.
All right, Nick.
Usually what I answer to. So.
Good. Welcome to the show. How are you?
Thank you. I'm doing very well, thanks.
Now, Nick, let's talk a little bit about who Nick is now, because you just didn't get up one morning and go, okay, I'm going to find out about UFOs and I'm going to start writing books. So how did that all come about?
Well, basically, Nancy, I guess I'm one of these people who's in the UFO subject who actually has never seen a UFO. You know, a lot of people do get into this phenomenon because they have their own experience, which, you know, very often can be quite a life-changing one. But for me, the reason and how and why I got involved is that my father used to work in the British Royal Air Force. He was a radar specialist. And he was actually involved in several UFO incidents in the 1950s where strange unidentified objects were tracked on the British Royal Air Force's radar scopes, closing in on the east coast of England. And aircraft were sent up from a nearby Air Force base to try and intercept them because the first thought was, is this the Russians trying to launch a sneak attack while our defenses are down? And the pilots reported not being able to get close to whatever these objects were, but saw these strange globular balls of light in the sky. And essentially what happened was kind of like a game of cat and mouse that went on over the course of about 3 nights, where these objects would almost seem to be testing the defenses of the coastline. And eventually, everybody who was involved in the incident, after it came to an end, was told not to talk about the incidents with their family, friends, and certainly not the media. And my dad didn't tell me until I was about 14 or 15, and that really got me interested then, from not just because, you know, the story came from my own father, but because he was also trained, you know, on radar for the military. So he was very, I guess, adept at, you know, interpreting and understanding what radar scopes can pick up and how mistakes can be made, etc. But this really sort of set me on the path of then reading books and magazines. And then from there, when I finished my education, I began working as a journalist and thought, well, why not try and combine the background in journalism? We're doing like an investigative process on the UFO subject as well. So I guess in that respect, I have my dad to blame for the position I'm in right now. So.
And I'm sure you thank him every day.
I do.
Good. Now, a lot of people have really not seen UFOs. So, you know, everybody is thinking, well, somebody's got this great imagination or, you know, I'd love to see a UFO. But the people who have seen UFOs, people who have been in contact or are considered contactees, you talk to those kind of people?
Yes. I mean, this is one of the things, one of the aspects, I should say, of the UFO subject that particularly fascinates me. You know, we can learn a lot, I think, from looking at UFO sightings in the sky and photographs. But I think, you know, if we're really going to pinpoint what lies at the heart of the mystery, we have to go to the people who are having the really close encounters, you know, the people who claim actual visitations or interaction with aliens and meetings, etc. So that's what I've tried to do with the Contactees book, is to really delve deeply into the stories, some from decades ago and some from the present day, of people who've said they've met aliens and what they say is the agenda behind why these beings and entities are here.
Do most of the contactees that you've talked with, Nick, do they come up with the same agenda or do they have totally different stories?
Well, yeah, it's a good question. I mean, for the most part, although there's obviously differences in the nature of the being sometimes we see little small creatures with the large black heads and black eyes that would probably be familiar to most people, you know, this archetypal image of what aliens are supposed to look like. But we also get a lot of reports of very human-looking aliens. But very often, although there are these differences in how the beings look, they actually seem to have a very similar message. One of the messages seems to be that these beings are trying to warn us about the future of the planet if we don't change our ways, whether it's atomic destruction or collapse of the ecosystem, the rainforests, the polar ice caps. Very often these people report how their mind is literally filled with imagery of things like, you know, the deforestation and the polar ice caps just collapsing. It's almost like an instilled message in their mind rather than a verbal message. So that seems to be one of the primary areas of contact. And another one seems to be to try and prompt the contactees to, I guess, in literal terms, spread the word of the aliens. A lot of the contactees have felt compelled after their experiences to speak out about them, very often on a large scale, conferences and lectures, to where it literally changes their world viewpoint and their, I guess, their role in life. You know, they feel they're on a mission to relate to people what they were told. So it's very much in that sense like a transformative experience, if you like.
Have any of the contactees that you've talked with had a not good experience?
Yes, I mean, there are some. For example, where there are a number of interesting but controversial stories where people have spoken about, they've had these experiences and they felt that these entities were almost, I guess, trying to suck out their soul in simple terms, which has led some people to believe that these are, I guess, you know, evil or supernatural entities in some respect, masquerading as aliens. It's kind of a controversial theory, but it actually does have a lot of support, particularly in people who've looked at the whole subject from a religious perspective, that they view it as like a demonic deception, and that these entities appear benign, but they're trying to lull us into a false sense of security. And on the other hand, also in a similar fashion, there are people who reported physical injuries, where, for example, if they've been in close proximity to a UFO, they've talked about having what sounds suspiciously like radiation burns and things like that, and damage to their eyes, etc., and skin. So, you know, it's not all kind of like a rosy, happy picture. There are a few disturbing stories amongst, you know, the other ones as well.
I've interviewed several people about UFOs, and I can't remember his name, but he calls himself the E.T. Hunter.
Oh, Daryl Sims?
Yes.
Yes.
Have you talked with him?
Yeah, I've met Daryl a couple of times at lectures. He probably wouldn't even remember, but sort of 10, 12 years ago. You know, and I think people like Daryl, they're doing interesting work on this whole, you know, the abduction angle particularly, which is a little bit different from straightforward contact. You know, the idea of people almost being literally kidnapped and taken on board craft, et cetera, and subjected to medical experimentation. And, you know, that's, I guess that's one of the big areas of the UFO field, certainly in the last 10, 15, 20 years. And, you know, a lot of people like Daryl are doing research in that area.
Yeah, I met Daryl actually down in Roswell this last year when they were all meeting down there for their national convention.
Oh, yeah.
And he was, you know, he wrote a couple of books and stuff, and he was actually very, very interesting and quite funny, but very dead serious about, you know, they searched him out, now he's going to search them out.
Yeah.
So it was kind of fun hearing the other side of the story, because other people like Victoria Lillenquist, who is a contactee, you know, who actually did a movie about what she discovered and won, you know, hers is a whole total different story. So I was very curious on, you know, is 50% of the stories not good stories or?
Well, you know, I think, I won't say it's all bad, because there are a lot of people who've had the experience, and it's not been a bad experience in terms that these entities come across as evil, but it's been a traumatic experience to where a lot of people have almost fallen into a state of like post-traumatic stress disorder. I said not because they felt ill-treated, but it was just such a stressful, far-out experience that it really sort of affected them quite badly from a mental perspective. Now, of course, you know, it's kind of similar. If you take your dog to the veterinarians, you know, the dog gets panicky when it gets in the room because, you know, it can smell the fear of the other animals, I suppose. But it's actually for the dog's well-being that it's there. And I think you can argue that could be the case in some of these contacts, that people aren't necessarily placed in hostile environments, but it is such a traumatic experience that it does come across, you know, with negative vibes, I suppose. But in saying that, there are some reports where people have felt the entire experience was wholly negative, and these beings were literally like evil and were using the human race. And, you know, I think sometimes there's a tendency to believe or conclude that if aliens are visiting us, that they all have one agenda. You know, but it may be, I'm quite sure that, you know, if whatever alien life may be, it's as complex and as different as life on Earth to where, for example, you know, different nations on Earth have different agendas. You know, it's not strictly a black and white thing that we can look at and say yes or no. So I suspect that the same would apply to any sort of alien visitors, that there could be numerous agendas and visits from numerous races, and, you know, some benign and some hostile and some somewhere in between, shall we say.
Don't you think, Nick, that they have been visiting this planet for thousands and thousands of years? Mm-hmm. Because, you know, even when you go over to Egypt and you look at the hieroglyphics there, they always show stick figures with these, like, helmet-looking things over mm-hmm. the head, or the Indians do the same thing. So, I mean, to me, they couldn't just dream it up. You know, it doesn't make any sense. You know, so I would suspect that they've been here for, like I said, thousands and thousands of years. And I don't understand why our governments and all around the world mm. are trying to constantly cover this up and hide it, because it doesn't make any sense. It's going to be exposed.
Mm. Well, you know, I think there's several reasons. I mean, I agree with you first that if you look back into ancient texts and stories and legends, there's a lot of evidence suggesting that, you know, the UFO phenomenon of today is actually a very old one. It's just that, you know, a couple of thousand years ago or 500 years ago, people weren't talking in terms of UFOs and flying saucers. It was, you know, strange wonders in the sky. And the ancient Greeks, for example, had legends of what they called flying shields in the sky, which again sound very much like flying saucers. But I think as far as why there's so much government secrecy, I think there could be several things going on. I think government agencies around the world probably have a lot of information on UFOs, and certainly far more than any of us in the UFO research community have, probably, you know, a million times more. However, I'm not entirely sure they have all the answers. And I think it's possible, you know, we have this tendency to think that if the government's hiding something, it's because they know it all. It may actually be the case that the government's hiding a great deal of ignorance of the phenomenon beyond the fact that they know something's going on, but they may not have a full understanding of the agenda. And it could possibly be that the reluctance to admit that they know something's going on but they're unable to stop it and they don't really understand it could be a prime factor in withholding the facts. And I think also, you know, there's the economic issue. People talk about, for example, whether or not if the government's got their hands on crashed UFOs, if they've actually recovered some crashed UFOs and they understand the technology, what would happen if they introduced overnight to the world a new technology that made, shall we say, oil redundant, you know, petroleum redundant, and we bankrupted all the oil-producing nations overnight because that technology was no longer needed. We had this fantastic new technology. That could actually make the world a far more unstable place than it is even now. You know, if you imagine the volatile situation in the Middle East at the best of times, if, you know, a particular government said, well, we have this technology, we no longer need oil, and we just turn around and say to the people in the Middle East, thank you, but we don't need you anymore. And the entire Middle East is bankrupted overnight because its main form of income comes from oil, then you could understand how an admittance that UFOs exist could actually mutate into almost like an economic worldwide nightmare, you know, with countries on edge because they see themselves going down the drain because of introductions of new technology, and who knows where that would lead in terms of, you know, even worse wars and things like that as everybody struggles to protect their own turf and survive this sudden change. So I think there's a lot of things to look at beyond just the admittance of whether or not UFOs are real and what the government knows, but these more subtle aspects, you know, related to the economy and whether or not the government actually has the answers. So.
But see, even if, in my opinion, and it only is mine, even if they would at least acknowledge the fact that, yes, that is going on, they don't have to overnight introduce all of the stuff that they know. I mean, they've used lasers now. Everybody has a different story about where the lasers came from, okay? And it first was probably very scary for a lot of people, but lasers are doing a lot of terrific things now for people. You know, so I would think that even if that is a factor of them not wanting to admit it, you know, if they did it in a gentle, slow way where it's not like overnight, okay, we're going to do this, I still think it would actually help out the people to know that we're not all crazy and that the government isn't lying anymore. Because, I mean, we look at the government and go, what is your problem? You know, and I don't think most of the people understand, you know, and I understand what you're saying about the economy because it could be very well true. But at the same time, our economy here is horrible. And it doesn't matter what they tell everybody, you can look at, you know, your neighbor almost or two doors down and they're all losing their jobs. So, you know, maybe acknowledging that fact that this is something new that's coming, maybe it could also not hurt the economy, but help the economy so that people can get back to work or people can do other things or, you know, they can mass produce or whatever the case may be. You know, so I think they need to look at it a couple ways, not just, oh, my God, is this going to ruin the world? Because right now, I mean, we're ruining the earth with what we're doing to it.
No, you're right. And I think, you know, that those are all valid points. I think, you know, it's a problem, whether it's UFOs or anything with the government, it's always difficult to understand what goes through the minds of people in government. You know, they don't always do things on any subject, you know, the way we feel they should do them. You know, it's like if we put the people in charge of the government, we probably have a much better relationship around the world. It's just that, you know, politicians, we have to elect politicians who, you know, don't always reflect what the populace wants, shall we say. And I think you know, you're quite right about the introduction of technology overnight versus, you know, sort of a subtle introduction where it doesn't cause too much of a calamity. I think the only stumbling block with that really is that I think if the government admitted that UFOs exist, there would be such a clamoring for the information, and the press particularly would be digging so deep that it might be difficult to present the information slowly. And I think also the other fact is that whichever president, prime minister, queen, king, etc., admits that yes, UFOs are here, by default they also have to admit that their predecessors lied for 60, 70 years. And I think that's one of the problems. You know, if you looked at it from a hypothetical perspective, that President Obama next week says, you know, calls a press conference and says, yes, UFOs exist and this is what's been going on. He then, unfortunately, from his perspective as president, has to follow that by saying, oh, well, the reason I'm now announcing it is because every previous U.S. administration has lied to the American public, and that includes the Democrats. You know, that I think that could be a problem. It's not just the admittance that they're here. It's also the admittance that everybody, that there's been a consistent process of lying to the U.S. population for years. And I think no prime minister, president, or whoever wants to be the one who admits that people have been deceived within, you know, in their millions.
But at some point in time, they're going to have to, because the sightings are getting to be so much now, and all around the world, not just, you know, in England like they really were before, but all around the world, that at some point in time, people are going to look and go, you know, I saw this myself, and I know you're seeing it too, because there's a lot of reports from a lot of different people in all different towns around here. So you can try to hide it all you want. However, you know, we know that this is a fact. So in reality, I think by the government not doing that, it is really going to make the people distrust the whole
thing. I agree with you. I think it will. I think what the government's possibly waiting for is a change in the phenomenon to where perhaps they're forced to say something because they don't really know how to say it. You know, it's like, for example, if there was a landing on the White House lawn or outside the Kremlin, etc., then a hasty statement would have to be made, an admittance would have to be made. But whatever these entities are, landing on the White House lawn, showing themselves openly, doesn't seem to be part of their agenda. And unfortunately, from my perspective, as much as I hate to say, that actually works in the government's favor, because as long as these beings stay in the shadows and don't openly show themselves en masse, then the government's, that actually makes the government's job of hiding it even easier. It becomes difficult for the government when, you know, large-scale sightings occur, might begin every week, you know, over major cities. if it got to that stage, they would have to reveal the information. But unfortunately, from our perspective, these entities aren't doing that, and I think that is aiding the secrecy.
Mm-hmm. Do you know of Victoria Lilliquist? She lives in Colorado.
No, I don't, unfortunately. No.
She, you know, I interviewed her, and actually she became a pretty good friend. And, you know, we talk a lot about UFOs because, you know, I totally believe that they've been here for a very long time. They're walking among us and everything else. And, you know, so we talked about it. And, you know, I asked her kind of the same question I asked you about the government. And, you know, she actually came up with some of the same answers, you know, basically that you're saying. So I can understand that. You know, I really can. Mm. I also talked to Tony Topping. Do you know who he is?
Oh, yes, I know. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. I just interviewed him, actually, for this Sunday show that's going to be shown, or last Sunday. And he's going through some really horrible, horrible experiences, but not from, you know, UFOs or anything, but from the government.
Mm.
Okay. And it's like they watch him all the time. They, you know, they're doing all kinds of stuff, you know, basically with his mind, you know, in his opinion. And so, you know, let me ask you, Nick, do you think that when somebody has, you know, a true contact with the UFO, that the government, doesn't matter what country or nation, does step in and tries to change so it doesn't come out?
Well, you know, do you mean in terms of the government watching the witnesses, that sort of thing?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I mean, there's no doubt that, you know, there are a number of very good UFO cases on record where people have had either close encounter sightings with UFOs or literal encounters with aliens, and they've received visitations from government personnel, you know, warning them not to talk about their experiences. And some of the so-called Men in Black reports, I'm absolutely certain, fall into this category where there are clandestine groups in the government whose whole job it is not just to monitor UFO activity, but to monitor the witnesses and to prevent, you know, significant cases getting out into the public domain. And there are a lot of stories about witnesses being threatened not to talk about their own experiences. And, you know, this strongly suggests that somewhere deeply buried within the government, there are covert groups whose whole job it is to just, you know, try and keep the lid firmly locked down on the witnesses. You know, I don't think the government has ever really tried to stop someone from speaking out if, you know, they've just seen a strange light in the sky, because they can just deny that and say it was anything. But I think particularly where people have had significant encounters, or, you know, they may have been present at a UFO crash site or stumbled across something like this, then in those cases where the incident is seen as being problematic from the government's perspective, I think there are, you know, particularly with these Men in Black stories, good evidence that people are being silenced and warned not to talk about what they saw. And, you know, unfortunately, you know, often if somebody opens a front door and finds, you know, someone in a suit and flashing government credentials and warning them, you know, they do stay quiet. You know, it does often intimidate people to where they don't want to speak about these incidents. And, you know, it's an unfortunate situation. But I think, on the other hand, if government agencies are keeping people quiet and silencing them, it obviously demonstrates that there's a validity and a reality to the UFO phenomenon, because if there was nothing to it, they wouldn't be so concerned. So in many respects, they're actually shooting themselves in the foot, because by silencing people, they're actually saying, yes, there's a phenomenon.
Mm-hmm. You know, that's my thing, too. It's like, you know, you have these people come to you, and they want you to be quiet, but at the same time, if they're trying to silence you, then something, they're worried about something, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And so, and I agree, they're basically shooting themselves in the foot. You know, I just know that there's going to be more UFO sightings coming in between now and 2012, which is what everybody's so worried about. But it's really not, it's not, 2012 is not to be where the world is not going to end.
Mm-hmm.
But I really believe that there will be more, only because there have been more, and whether it's just because the people are talking about it more,
mm-hmm.
or there's more, there's going to be more information that comes out. Now, the end of this month, I interviewed someone else, Patty Greer, and she does, you know, films about crop circles and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And she said at the end of this month, in Laughlin, Nevada, they're having the International UFO Convention, where she said people come from all over the world with their stories. She said, and, you know, I've talked with them. She said there's some hybrid people there, mm-hmm. you know, that, you know, will actually talk. And she said it's just one whole week of just, you know, stories that people tend to all kind of agree with each other that, yeah, this experience I had, yeah, this is going on, yeah, this has happened. She said, so it's quite interesting. So for anybody who's UFO mm-hmm. people out there, that would really be a good place to go just to listen to the stories as well.
Yeah, I've been to that particular conference several times, and it's a very good one. You know, it's a long conference, like a week-long one, and you get a really good wide range of speakers on a whole, you know, range of different topics. And, you know, I've spoken there several times, and it's very well organized and a thought-provoking presentations. And for anyone, you know, either new or well-versed in the subject, you know, you'll always get a lot of good information at that conference.
Yeah, see, if I can swing it, I'm going to try to go this year, but I have to see how my schedule is, you know. So now you've written several books. So your latest book is called Contactee, which is what we're talking about. So, Nick, can you tell the people how to get, a hold of the book to buy it and your website, please?
Yeah, sure. My website is nickredfern.com, NickRedFern. And there are links at the website to where people can buy the books, which will take people to all the usual good online book-selling outlets. And it's also widely available on the shelves at, all good bookstores as well in most major cities and towns. And at my website also, I have a lot of blogs on various subjects like UFOs, contactees, abductions, and where I update all the latest UFO news and book reviews, interviews, that sort of thing as well.
Have you ever talked with an abductee?
Yeah, I've spoken with a lot of abductees. And, you know, I think the interesting thing about abductees is that, you know, they come across as very normal, down-to-earth people, which they are, but they've been placed in extraordinary circumstances. And, you know, it's unfortunate that particularly the media really doesn't take the time to get to know abductees properly or contactees. You know, they just take the sort of lazy journalistic approach of making jokes about little green men and take me to your leader, that sort of thing, without appreciating that, you know, these are regular, normal members of society, you know, who, under any other circumstances, you would never sort of bat an eyelid, but they've been exposed to this strange phenomenon. But unfortunately, the media tends to portray them or likes to portray them, you know, as crazy people or eccentrics. And, you know, I've spoken to everybody from police officers to military people, to people in the medical field, to just not members of the public. And, you know, the image I get is just of regular, normal, credible people who've been placed in an incredible position. And, you know, the more people in this field that you interview, the abductees and the contactees, the more I think you become a good judge of character, and it becomes quite easy to determine if someone's being honest with you. And I think, you know, 99% of everyone I've spoken with is on it, has been honest, and, you know, is just genuinely puzzled by their experiences or traumatized sometimes and is just looking for answers. So, you know, I'm encouraged by the characters of the people I've spoken to that, you know, adds weight to the reality of the phenomenon.
Does the people that have had been abducted or contacted, do they, when they're talking to you, Nick, do they, you know, come up with the question is, I don't know why, you know, I was one of them or why I got chosen? Does that ever come up?
Yeah, I mean, one of the things I've found is that, you know, people who I've spoken to often don't just want to reveal the account of what happened to them. They, you know, they approach people like myself to try and get answers, you know, that they've had the experience and they don't really know why they've had it, why their life's been changed and turned upside down. So sometimes, you know, they're not looking to go public with their stories and be splashed across books and magazines. They just want, hopefully, someone who can help them provide an answer as to what on earth happened to them. And I think that's a good sort of litmus test of their credibility. You know, if they just, you know, they're not looking for fame, fortune, publicity. They're just looking for someone who can offer them some advice and help. So again, you know, you get into these subtleties of people's characters, you know, the more that you interview them.
Mm-hmm. There was a movie that came out probably about a month and a half, 2 months ago, about abductions. I don't remember the title of it, but it was about this doctor who was from Alaska, who had gone through, you know, being abducted, and then the end result is that, according to her, her daughter was abducted, and they have never found her to you know, to this date. But one of the statements that they make at the end of this movie, they put out a lot of facts, you know, different statements. And one of the statements is that I think it's Nome, Alaska. It's got one of the biggest populations of abductees in the world. And I don't know how true it is or anything, but the movie was pretty frightening. If anybody would go to see it, I mean, it was pretty frightening because it showed some of the experiences that she herself, you know, recorded and actually went through with some of the other people, because she was a psychiatrist. And she had interviewed a couple people who had been abducted, and they, like, did this horrific change. And they ended up basically going crazy. And then so she was, you know, told that she was just hallucinating and she was crazy and this is just stuff. But she gave a lot of interesting facts at the end of the movie that, you know, and it was questions mostly like, you know, this is what's going on. You know, how do you explain this? You know, they've seen, you know, things in the sky since 1940, blah, blah, blah. I mean, it's a lot of very interesting facts. And I think it's called Nome, Alaska.
Yes, it is. I forget the name of the film now. It's totally gone out of my head, but it is Nome, Alaska. And, yeah, it was kind of, you know, based on real events. You know, the idea that this particular area seemed to have this, I guess, concentration of abduction style events, which is actually quite unique. You know, it seems for the most part that abductions occur at random in terms of location, at least, you know, whether it's the US, South America, Africa, Russia, Australia, Europe, wherever. But, you know, it's very seldom that we get, occasionally we get like hot spot areas. For example, Gulf Breeze in Florida was a big hot spot in the 1980s. And, you know, that happens on occasion. But certainly this one particular area seems to have been, you know, targeted almost, deliberately targeted, I guess is a good way of putting it. And again, you know, it demonstrates another aspect of the UFO phenomenon as to what, you know, what may be going on.
But, you know, you might want to think about this. I'm just throwing it out because it just popped into my head. With Alaska being so close to Russia, and Russia's been studying this for a long, long time from what I understand, and they've actually shut down UFOs from also what I understand. Don't know if it's true, but that's what I understand. Could it possibly be that from Russia that they themselves are sending over different kinds of crafts and things and just kind of using that particular town because it's so far out of everything? It's just a way of learning different methods or trying different things. Could that be a possibility?
Do you mean the Russians trying something?
Uh-huh.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you mean in terms of secret weapons, that sort of thing?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, some people do think this. And I think there's something to the idea that, you know, that the more our technology advances and the more weird things are flying around the skies, it is going to be harder and harder to differentiate between what's a true UFO and what might be some sort of radical, highly advanced military device. You know, you only have to look at things like the stealth bomber and the stealth fighter, these huge black triangular-shaped craft. You know, if somebody had seen one of those when they were still on the secret list 25, 26 years ago, then people would have thought they were UFOs. You know, if they saw that, I'd say, out at in the desert late at night with no lights on, just, you know, flying over pretty quiet and at a low level. So I do think there is something to be said for the idea that some UFOs today could be evidence of the military testing new equipment and perhaps even using the UFO subject as a cover to do so. However, in saying that, I think when you look back at the 40s and 50s and you see particularly government documents on UFO encounters where they're clearly talking about people seeing things where there was no way we were flying objects like that back then, then that convinces me that although today we are flying some very strange things and doing some weird experiments, there's still a genuine alien component to this, which, you know, takes it far away from the realm of just government projects.
Now, I know for a long time the government has been using stellar energy, and they're trying to keep it as a secret, I would think, because there's so many things that can be, it can be used for and things that can be done. And one of them is, you know, actually, you know, the stealth was based upon, I believe, the stellar energy to get it off the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't know how well, you know, the government wants to talk about things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think that's part of it, along with quantum physics. Which, if you combine the two of them, you come out with a lot of different kinds of energies and
mm-hmm.
phenomena that are very probably unusual or hard to explain.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, I think you know, there's no doubt that, you know, when you look at government involvement in the UFO subject, for example, that we can trace back some of their projects possibly to the UFOs themselves, I should say. You know, the idea of things like back engineering and perhaps some of our advanced technologies today aren't necessarily our own work, you know, that they've been prompted by perhaps the recovery of wrecked UFOs, crashed UFOs, and we're trying to understand the technology. So possibly some of the technology that we're now developing might actually not be our own work. You know, it may be derived from alien craft or alien technology.
Yeah, I'm a very big moviegoer, and
mm-hmm.
I love going to movies with UFO stuff or anything like that. And Star Wars was a very big, big thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I've often wondered how the person who did the Star Wars came up with all those things that they came up with. Could it be that that person may have been a contactee?
Well, you know, people sometimes speculate on that. The notion that perhaps these beings have the ability to sort of instill, perhaps even subconsciously, you know, thoughts and ideas in our brains. I mean, you know, if you look throughout history, there have been sort of spontaneous periods where you had very, very intelligent, brilliant people come along who've literally changed our world views. You know, you look at people like, for example, Leonardo da Vinci, mm-hmm. Charles Darwin, you know, Albert Einstein, people like that who, you know, seem almost beyond brilliant and who not just come across as beyond brilliant, but actually radically change history and the future.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you have to wonder sometimes, is it only coincidence that, or just a quirk of nature that, you know, these people have these skills and come across like that? Or could it be that possibly, you know, there's a deliberate plan to seed ideas in certain people's minds and use them as sort of a vessel to upgrade our species every, you know, 50 or 100 years or thereabouts? You know, I actually don't rule that out, the idea that, you know, we could be given outside assistance, but it looks like we're doing it ourselves, but somebody's given us a careful nudge, if you like.
Yeah, that and Star Trek. I mean, they're both, I mean, I would look at those and I go, man, where did they come up with this idea?
Mm.
How could they come up with the things they came up with?
Yeah.
Something else had to be there, because people, I think in general, to come up with those kind of hits with
mm-hmm.
things that are so close with what we're seeing now,
mm-hmm.
had to have something either given to them much, much earlier in life, or something's happened to them that they may not even be aware of.
Yeah. Yes, yeah. I think, you know, the only indication that a lot of people get is occasionally that they'll have a strange dream that, you know, something happened to them. And it is a fact that if you look back into a lot of abduction and contactee cases, and particularly contactee cases, you find that very often people who've had this experience afterwards, they become fascinated and sometimes even almost like obsessed with new technologies and the idea of trying to develop new technologies. Again, as if something or someone has instilled the idea in their mind. And, you know, they'll suddenly, out of thin air, come up with a new idea for this or for that. And again, when you realize it's in the wake of a UFO experience, you have to wonder, again, has somebody, I guess, subliminally planted the thoughts or the ideas and in their minds, you know, with a viewpoint to using them, again, as a vessel to, you know, get the information out there. But you do find that, though, where, for example, people claim close encounters and, you know, then they, as I said, they have this fascination with technologies, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. Do you think, Nick, that there's hybrids walking the earth today?
Yeah, I mean, this is one of the areas I dig into quite deeply in the book, is the idea of, you know, the very human-looking aliens who actually also seem to display evidence, you know, of human characteristics. And I've interviewed a number of abductees who, again, come across very, very credible, who talk about having been taken on board alien craft and having been told that there's some sort of genetic operation or program going on a large scale, which basically involves the manipulation, is probably the best word to use, of like human DNA and genetics to try and create a crossbreed being, because according to what these aliens tell us, their own species is kind of like on an evolutionary decline. They're allegedly a very, very ancient species, and, you know, over time, like the dinosaurs or, you know, the mammoth, etc., they become extinct, or they're on the verge of extinction, and their way of saving themselves is to try and integrate themselves literally and physically into our society and save themselves by taking the best part of us and the best part of them and trying to splice it together. So, you know, when you speak to, if we only had one or two of these cases on record, we could perhaps dismiss them, but there are literally hundreds and hundreds, and those are just the people who have gone public, talking about this genetic hybrid program. Now, some researchers see it as benign, that these are, I guess, you know, in essence, self-serving entities, but they're not hostile, but they're just trying to do all they can to save themselves. Now, there are other researchers and authors like Dr. David Jacobs, who's written a number of books on the abduction subject, including The Threat, who he actually believes that the reasoning behind the hybrids is to use them to infiltrate, in a sinister sense, our society, and that the ultimate goal is the takeover of the planet and our society, but not by the aliens landing, but using these hybrids to infiltrate the government, the military, and our society in general, to where the invasion's over before we even know it, if you see what I mean. And of course, you know, that theory has, again, as many believers as it does detractors. So yeah, I think in many respects, it's sort of like a wait-and-see game as to where this is all going to lead.
Mm-hmm. And I find all of that very, very fascinating. So give out your website again, please, for our listeners.
All right. It's nickredfern.com, and I have a lot of links on the site to the work I'm doing, whether it's reviewing other people's books or latest news stories I've found, interviewing witnesses and things like that, and people can find out more about me and the books at the website too.
These there's a place, I think it's in China, maybe Japan, but they have, what I've been told, again, I can't prove this, but what I've been told, they have found about 3,000 children that have got extra DNA strand of some sort, who are very, very highly evolved psychically, kinetically, and can do a multitude of things that if you would look at the child, you would think, how are you doing this? Like, they can put their hand on a book and not even open a page and know the entire book.
I didn't know, but I haven't heard about that one. But, I mean, you do get a lot of stories, for example, within the, particularly in the abduction field, of children having been abducted and then seemingly becoming very gifted. You know, again, as if this is like a deliberate, almost like a genetic, like a scientific tampering, I guess is perhaps the best way to describe it, where, you know, the children even have come back radically altered, and then they seem to be elevated beyond the previous generation, you know, whether it's intelligence-wise or whatever. And again, you know, you have to wonder if this is evidence of alien interaction and intervention to kind of improve our stock, so to speak. You know, I think that's a possibility. People, you know, have noticed that in recent years there's been a lot of research done into the idea that, you know, almost like super children coming along is perhaps a good way of describing it.
Yeah, that's one of the things that I moved down to New Mexico to do, Nick, was to open a school for these basically super children, or children that have actually been labeled with ADD, ADHD, that really don't have it, because it's kind of a fallacy in my mind, but are very, very intelligent, and because they are, they're very bored with the norm here. And so that's my key reason for, I just moved to New Mexico about 10 months ago. And a lot of strange things since I moved down here has happened to me, and it's kind of weird and kind of exciting all at the same time. But like the house that I live in, and I've talked about this before, the whole southern half of this house is all windows. Mm-hmm. And so at night, because I'm up really late, sometimes 2, 3 o'clock in the morning, a lot of strange things go on out here because it's all open land.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, on the other side of the mountains, which is probably about 12 miles from the house,
mm-hmm.
is a military base.
Mm-hmm.
And so I see a lot of strange things. And I'm not quite sure if it's because they're trying to do some testing or if really what I'm seeing. Like, for example, one night about, I don't know, 2:30, 3 o'clock in the morning, my bedroom window faces due east to the mountains. And I always look because I like to see what's out there.
Yeah.
But just above the mountains, not right at the mountain, but just above the mountain was this huge, huge, like, glowing ball, like a very big white light. And I watched it because I'd not seen it before, and I thought, that's kind of interesting. It's not moving. It's not changing color. It's just this big, bright ball of light.
Mm-hmm.
And then it started shooting red lasers in all different directions out from it. I thought, man, that's kind of cool. I wonder if it's our government. You know, because from what I understand, a lot of UFO sightings are always around a military base.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was just, you know, wondering, wonder whether it is. It's Kirkland base. I don't know if it's Air Force or whatever. But it was like there, and I can't deny it. But then I watched it for probably about 30 minutes, and it was like gone. It just gone. And I thought, that was kind of interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But I've not come back, and I haven't seen it. So I was going to get myself a telescope so I could actually check over by the mountains because there's many things going on, you know. And there's for a long time there was like this, it would be like a star, but it's not a star because it changes colors, okay? But it's only one, and it will move just very little. It doesn't move a lot, but it changes colors. Now, I know stars don't change colors.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to sit here and wonder, well, gee, I wonder what that is. And it's not close. I mean, it's up there real, real far. So it would take a very high-powered telescope to actually check it out.
Mm-hmm.
You know. And then when I'd come down here to try to find a place to live, I found the place I was driving back to Illinois. And I happened to glance up in the clouds, and it was like the whole underside of a mothership, you know, I saw.
Wow.
As soon as I saw it, it was like gone. And I thought, no, that's different too. You know, but I enjoy things like that because I find it very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So those kind of things, since I've been down here in New Mexico, has happened to me. Plus, some part of me has changed since I've been down here because I used to drink a lot of Pepsi, like cherry Pepsi, cherry Coke. I can't drink it anymore. It tastes like mildew.
Mm-hmm.
And it happened after I'd done a series of things. Like one of the people that I met here owns a crystal skull.
Mm-hmm.
And so me being nosy and, you know, wanting to know things,
mm-hmm.
we talked about it, and he said, well, would you like to see it? And I said, yeah, I'd like to see it. You know, and so the day that I went to see it, you know, we were just kind of talking, and he goes, would you like to hold it? And I looked at him, I'm like, do you really have to ask? And so he handed me the crystal skull, and as soon as I was holding it and I had it facing me, it filled me with energy, like it plugged up my ears and my nose, you know, like you're in an airplane and you're plugged up. It did that the entire time I was holding it. And then when I gave it back to the owner, it all went out just as quickly as it came in.
Hmm.
I mean, it was amazing. And then he also used to work for NASA in the plutonium division, and so he basically built himself a healing bed using plutonium crystals in sea salt water.
Mm-hmm.
And so, of course, he said, would you like to try it sometime? And I go, well, yeah. You know? So I did. You know, and it was, like, strange because while I was laying on the bed, it was like I was on one of those little rafts in a little tiny pond that was just kind of rippling, you know, like a real nice, wavy, gentle effect.
Mm-hmm.
Was going through me the entire time. And then the last 5 minutes before the time was up, it was like my crown chakra opened and all these beautiful colors came in. I mean, just electrifying colors. And I'm laying there going, oh, man, what beautiful colors. Because I'm seeing the Kelly greens and the royal purples and the silvers and the golds just kind of streaming in. And I hear him say, colors? You're seeing colors?
Mm-hmm.
I said, yeah. You know, really, really pretty colors.
Mm.
And then, after I held the crystal skull, it apparently scanned me from what, it, you know, he told me. But my gallbladder must have, you know, been bad or something because it, like, totally cleaned out my whole system. So that was a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then after laying on the bed, about 4 or 5 days after that, we were renting a home. And my mom and I stay up and play cards really late, so I'm up. All of a sudden, this energy came through this place we were living, and it was so thick. walking through sand. Mm. And I could feel it touching me, you know, like touching my face, rubbing on my arm. And my mom has a cat, and this cat's very sensitive. So when that energy started, this cat just, like, dropped to the floor in a dead stare. Mm. Never moved. And my mom said, Nancy, there's something wrong with my cat. I'm going, well, maybe it just has upset stomach, because I didn't want to say what I was feeling, you know, because I didn't want her to freak out.
Yeah.
But it was amazing, you know, and it wasn't bad energy, because all I kept saying is, if you're bad, you've got to leave, because I'm not going to accept you. But it didn't. And it stayed until I went to sleep. Mm-hmm. So when I woke up, it was gone. Mm-hmm. But it was just incredible, you know, and I'm going, wow, you know, this is all cool stuff. You know, but to tell a lot of people that, they look at you like, oh, yeah, all right, Nancy, you sure you went off the deep end now? You know? But
well,
it's just those kind of things.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I mean, I think a lot of people in this field have those experiences. And I often think, you know, it's for a reason. When, you know, you talk about meeting someone, do you want to hold a crystal skull? You know, I think sometimes we're meant to meet people like that. We're meant to have these experiences because it's like a larger scale that we don't necessarily see the full picture at the time, but it's, you know, it's always for a reason. And I think that's possibly something to bear in mind, that's, you know, there's something bigger in store, so to speak.
Yeah, I think it's kind of fun.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, some people would go, you're just absolutely crazy, Nancy. And it's like, okay, you know, I know what I experience and I know what I see. You know, so I'm always looking up in the skies here just to see what's around, what's coming.
Yeah, New Mexico has got a lot of a long history of UFO activity, and of course, you know, with a lot of desert, you get a good view of the sky without all the light pollution of the cities, etc. And
yeah.
I think, you know, that's New Mexico is a very sort of interesting and intriguing place in that respect.
Yeah, it's really funny because there's this mountain range called Ladrone,
mm-hmm.
and there's this big peak. It's like 92 feet elevation, and I went out on the land where this guy that owns the Crystal Skull, he's done a lot of energy work on it, and he was showing me different things he's done, and I kept feeling this draw, but I wasn't facing it, and I couldn't figure out what it was. And so I was holding this one thing, and he said, Nancy, can you feel the energy? And I go, well, yeah, but I think I got to turn around. And he goes, oh, okay. And when I turned around, it was this big peak. It was like this energy came and almost knocked me off my feet.
Mm.
And I went, whoa. He goes, are you okay? And I said, yeah, I just kind of strange. I said, what is that mountain over there? He goes, oh, that's called the Ladrone Peak. He says, it's got a lot of stories about it, Nancy. I said, really? Like what kind? He said, well, you know, where UFOs go in and they don't come out. People seen angels, things like that. And I said, you know, and then we've been out on this land for about 2.5-3 hours.
Mm.
I said, I need to go there. He goes, today? I said, no, but I need to go there. And so this house that I'm renting, when I look out the windows towards the south, it's almost like a 180-degree view.
Mm-hmm.
I see this mountain.
Mm.
And it's just like I have this draw, but right now it's got snow on it, so I'm not going to go over it. But I've got to go. I've got to go over there. You know, I have to do this. It's something that's just pulling me there, and I have to go.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I don't know why or what the experience may be, but, you know, after I find it out, I'm going to let people know what it was. But it's kind of those kind of things that I think are really cool. And I think people, Nick, experience a lot of those, but they don't know what it is, or they're actually afraid to talk about it.
Mm. No, I agree with you. I think, you know, all those aspects come into play very deeply, either consciously or subconsciously, you know, in the subject. But, you know, as you point out, it goes far beyond just, oh, look, that's a UFO in the sky. You know, there's so many different facets and aspects to it. And, you know, that's the more personal experiences that people have, I think the more profound we realize, you know, that the phenomenon becomes with some of the things you've just mentioned. So.
Mm-hmm. You know, Nick, one more time. We're almost out of time. Can you give out your website, please?
Yeah, sure. It's nickredfern.com, and it's got a lot of information all about UFOs, my research, cases that I'm working on, incidents that I've investigated, etc., etc.
We'll have to have you come back on the show again because we didn't even touch a lot of it yet.
No, there's a lot of things going on in ufology.
Yeah, so we'll have to have you back on again, Nick. But thank you very much for taking the time and, you know, sharing what you've shared. I think it's very,
all right.
Very interesting.
Well, I appreciate it, Nancy. Thanks for having me on.
You're very welcome. You take care. Have a great day.
You too. Thanks. Bye-bye.
I'd like to thank you, the listeners. May God bless all of you. Have a great day and take care. Bye now.